Hey, what's up, guys? It's your host, Lopez, and I just want to say thank you for tuning into this episode today. If you're on Facebook and want to show some support with a like on the page, you can find it by going to facebook.com/behindcloseddoorspodcast or just searching Behind Closed Doors Podcast. You can also find it on Twitter at the BCD Podcast and on Instagram at the Behind Closed Doors Podcast. Last but not least, follow the podcast on Spotify by searching Behind Closed Doors in the podcast section to see all the amazing upcoming interviews I have to come. Every Sunday, I post a picture of a band with a hint of who my next guest is. Then on Tuesday, I post a brief clip from our video interview with a good highlight of our conversation we had. And lastly, post the new episode up on Spotify every Thursday morning. Now, on to the episode.
I'm good. I'm like at the last 10% of a hangover, so I've rounded the crest of the hill, and I'm starting to feel alive again, which is great.
Starting to feel better now.
Yeah.
It's Sunday over there where you're at? No,
it's Saturday here.
Saturday. So where are you from again?
Ireland.
Ireland. Okay, sweet man. Where'd you originally grow up at?
In Ireland too. Yeah, I'm Irish, so I've been here the whole time. You're in LA, is that right?
I'm in Indiana. It's close towards Michigan. I'm in the top part, the top part of the U.S. So
sure. Okay, cool.
So what time is it over there?
It is just coming up to 4 o'clock here.
4 o'clock, dang. We got a little bit of that time difference. It's almost 10 a.m.
A little
here.
Bit. Yeah, it's crazy, man. It's even like I've noticed over, COVID. If there's lessons and stuff happening, it's like it's such an ordeal to like organize a time slot if someone's in the States and I'm here. You know, it's always this big kind of operation you got to sort out.
So for anybody listening, we've got David Dockery. This guy is a genius on the drums. He plays guitar a little bit too, sings now. Yep. And yeah. It's not what a lot of people think when it comes to drums. You do some musical stuff. I've seen the jazz with the orchestra. Interpretation with the drums. They originally didn't have any drums on it.
The album itself did, but that particular track, for some reason, it just didn't have drums, even though it lent itself so well to having drums on it. So I had to step in,
So you killed it with that. You did a couple of different little cover videos from what I see on the Final Fantasy stuff . And then what caught my eye is it came up on my recommended videos. It was the go to most popular. It was the Willy Wonka drums that you had done, and I have never seen anything like that before. That's just genius, mastermind. Thanks, right man. Here.
I'm glad you liked it, man. I'm glad you liked it. Thanks a lot.
Not a problem. So, a little bit more about yourself. What part of Ireland did you grow up at, and is that where you're currently still at?
Yes, I grew up in. It's in a town in like pretty much the center of Ireland, the dead center of Ireland, called Athlone. So yeah, that's where I am now as well. COVID is like pretty much grounded everybody to their places for the time being. So yeah, that's where I am.
So that's, how is it over there in Ireland with COVID?
It's interesting. Like it's at the start, I think Ireland handled it pretty well and they were really on top of things with like introducing restrictions, like right when it started coming over here. But then obviously people start getting complacent after a while. I'm sure it's the same in the States and everywhere. But at Christmas, just a few months ago, for some reason the government decided to like loosen most of the restrictions to let people kind of have a somewhat normal Christmas, but everybody kind of went a bit overboard with it then, and now since then we've been just trying to like rein it back in because the case has exploded.
I bet.
Yeah, so but like more or less, I mean, since this time last year when coronavirus became a thing, most businesses and stuff in Ireland have been closed. There's been very little, like pubs and stuff like that are all closed. So it's kind of bleak. I mean, it's very boring, but it's better than if it was just like chaos and everywhere was open and stuff like that.
Right, but, right, yeah.
I think like the actual levels of the virus over here aren't too bad at the moment, just the main thing, I suppose.
Yeah, it's over here, from my understanding, like the way that they get the case count, and I'm pretty sure it's the same everywhere. Like if you get it more than once, each individual time that you had it counts as a case, so that like makes the numbers like multiply, you know.
Uh-oh.
And from what a lot of things that I've seen too, and having some family members that are in the, you know, the health industry, they work in the medical field and whatnot, they can confirm that if you have a heart attack or a stroke or something and you have COVID, they're going to classify it as COVID rather than that heart attack. So that's another reason why those death count numbers are super duper high, you know?
Yeah, that's, I think that's the same everywhere. It's the same here too. It's like you die with COVID as opposed to of COVID. It's a real gray area. Like, so it's interesting.
Right. Yeah. You get eaten by a fucking shark and you have COVID. And that's why you died. You could have, you know, you got bitten half by a shark, you would have lived. But if you didn't have COVID, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So for you, you play the drums, man. What got you? So is that the first instrument that you learned?
Technically, it's not, but it's the first. Well, so like when I was, I think, maybe like 8 or 9 or even 10 or something like that, my parents sent my brother and I to piano lessons just as a kind of I guess you just try it with your kids and see if they like latch onto it and enjoy it and stuff. So we took those for a while, but I think after almost not even a year, maybe, I think I quit because it was like, it felt very forced. It was like, get in there and you're going to play the piano and you're going to like it. Like, you know, and I wasn't at the time, like when I was a kid, up as far as when I became a teenager, I was just obsessed. Like my thing, it wasn't music at all. It was like soccer. Or football over here. I was absolutely obsessed with it. So like anything else was just kind of superfluous. There was no point to doing anything else because all I wanted to do was play football all day. So that's when I went to keyboard lessons and I was like, I'm not into this. I didn't even listen to music at the time. You know, it's just, we just went for something to do. But then, like when I was like 12 or 13, when I started in high school, is when I actually started getting into music proper. And then the drums was the first instrument I would consider I actually really took up and like had an interest in, you know.
What kind of influences did you have on that?
Do you mean like who influenced me to start or?
Yeah, like who influenced you to start? And then like when you were playing, what kind of stuff did you find yourself playing to?
Right, right. Well, I think the answer to both is kind of wrapped up into one because my older brother, who was like 3 years older than me, so he was kind of getting into like rock music when I was just becoming a teenager. So he and all his friends would be like playing in bands and listening to music in our house after school and stuff, so I'd be kind of exposed to like, I guess the stuff that really got me into it first is like Rage Against the Machine and like, you know, the classic rock stuff, like,
yeah.
But and also, so my brother was in bands as well, and like the band that he was in for the longest time, their drummer was like really, really good. So I'd kind of like sneak out and like watch their practices sometimes, like if they're having band practice, and I'd always kind of fixate on the drums. And but even when I was like listening to music, I'd always seem to kind of, my ear would latch onto the drums more than anything else. So that guy in the band would have been my influence to actually start playing the drums. But musically, I'd say, yeah, like Rage Against the Machine. Who else? Kind of some punk stuff as well. Like he was into like Dead Kennedys and Misfits and stuff like that. And like, it wouldn't be my favorite stuff. Even back then it wasn't, but it was like, it was kind of exciting. Like, and it kind of got me in the mood to actually play some music, you know?
Right, right. Yeah. So what was the first drum kit that you ever owned?
It's the classic. It's like the unbranded, like beaten to bits drum kit. I got it like, I think it was actually not even second hand, but like third hand. I bought this drum kit off some guy who had like, it was in his shed just gathering dust. Like, and just a beat up drum kit. 4-piece kit with like, again, unbranded cymbals that sounded like garbage can lids. Like, it was just I think it's good to start that way though, you know. It's kind of like it humbles you or something like that.
Yeah.
And then I remember specifically the first time I got like some proper cymbals, and they weren't even proper cymbals, but they were like mid-level Sabian cymbals, and I remember just like setting up the hi-hat and just hitting it a few times with a stick and being like, oh my god, this is actually how a cymbal is meant to sound. I was like, I could like play an entire song just on this hi-hat right now, and it'd be just the most fun ever.
It makes a difference, don't it?
Oh yeah, man, it really does. Like, and it kind of, it's good to kind of get to grips with the instrument, like on whatever beat up setup you have. And then when this new stuff comes in, it makes it sound infinitely better. It's so inspiring. It's like, if there was ever any danger of you quitting. It's like, it's gone now. It's like, you know, now that you know how it can sound. So it was very much like that. Yeah. So my first kit was just a piece of crap. Like, you know.
Right. Right. Yeah. I had a, it was 2 years ago. It was a Tama Silver Star, I think it was. And it was a, had three rack toms and then two floor toms. And it was a badass kit. I'll have to see your picture after this. And
definitely.
I originally had a I think it was either a $200 or $300 cymbal pack from, I want to say it was Sabian as well. But after I went from those to a $1,000 Zildjian cymbal pack, oh my God, it's fucking night and day difference. It sounds like, you know, busting glass compared to like just junk metal, you know?
Absolutely, man. I think like it's definitely the most important thing to spend a little bit of money on is like maybe like your snare drum and your cymbals and like everything else. I could play a house kit all day. Once I have my snare and cymbals, it's fine. Like, you know, it doesn't matter what the drum kit is. It's like,
exactly,
man. Yeah. But like, and I've even had that as well. Like what you said, I mean, when you were, you had your kind of your decent Sabian or whatever brand it was beforehand, and then you got these like lovely Zildjians. I find that even now, if I like buy one cymbal and like I splash out on some like really nice ride cymbal or something like that, I put it down and it's like, holy crap. It's like,
yeah,
it's just, there's nothing better than the feeling of like stuff that used to sound good when you played it sounding infinitely better just by having a new thing to hit. Like, you know?
Yeah. Especially with the snare too. I'm glad you brought that up. Cause before that kit, I had a, it was a Mapex Armory. It was the Armory series and it was a Seafoam Green kit. And, it was a virgin kick, so it didn't have anything, you know, mounted to the actual snare. So it was just, I mean, the kick drum. So it was just the kick drum itself. And that makes a huge difference on its own. But the snare, when I had that, going from just the regular, the brand was, I think it was just called Rock Drum. It was just some super generic brand snare that I had. Going from that to a, it was the Mapex Daisy Cutter. Dude, it sounded just like, it was so thick. It had a nice pop to it, like a piccolo snare, just about in world of difference when you get good equipment and, you know.
100%. And I think I've heard, I think one of my friends might have that Mapex snare. I'm not sure, but I've never actually, interestingly, I've never had a virgin kick, if that's what you call it.
Like, they're...
I've only ever had the like the ones with the mount on the top of them and stuff like that. So I can't actually... agree with you or disagree about how they sound, but I assume they sound better, you know.
Oh yeah, because there's no, you know, like there's nothing from what I see and what I've been told that, you know, like Sweetwater and Guitar Center, that when you have it mounted into the snare drum or whatever, it kind of takes away some of that, the ring and the pop from the kick drum, because it's actually absorbing through that metal or whatever that's mounted to the hardware. So I mean, it makes sense.
It has to affect the sound. I mean,
you've got
a hole in your drum.
So what kind of, what's your pride and joy now? What are you playing on nowadays?
I wouldn't even call it my pride and joy, but the kit that I have at the moment is, incidentally, it's a Mapex. So the one that I take to gigs is a Mapex, a Saturn series. Like, okay. They're kind of newer, kind of Manhattan Jazz kit. So that's an 18-inch kick and a 12 and a 14 tom. And I've been using a Ludwig Super Light snare. So it's not, it's like their budget Superphonic, but man, it's incredible. Like, I remember I played it first in a friend's studio when I was just recording a track. And I thought it was a Superphonic because it sounded so good and it essentially looks exactly like one. And then I went on the internet and it's like €200, which is like maybe $250 for a brand new one. I was like, holy shit, I have to do it. Like, you know, so that's kind of what I'm playing. And cymbals, it's kind of a mishmash, really. I have like a set of Sabian Legacy hi-hats. I'm using a K Light Ride and like a Paiste 2002 Crash and like some other, it's a mess, like, you know, unendorsable.
So is that the electronic kit that you have back there just to like kind of jazz around on?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Cause I can't really make noise here. And that's perfectly fine for just keeping my hands in shape and just keeping like pattern. I actually don't really mind playing it. The only issue is that because of like the mesh pads being quite bouncy and then the rubber pads being quite hard, it is prone to like getting to developing some arm pain when if I play for too long. Like, it's right before COVID reared its ugly head last year, I was actually experiencing a pretty persistent arm injury, and I think it was to do with the fact that I was practicing a lot on the kit, on the electric kit, and it was actually almost like kind of fortunate that like all the gigs got cancelled because of COVID, because I could actually take some time off, which I absolutely couldn't have done that because I play music for a living. Like, so if that hadn't come along, I might have like really kind of exacerbated this injury to be way worse than it is. But now it's manageable. Like, I still kind of get it if I don't take care of myself and stretch. But other than that, the electric kit, I actually quite enjoy practicing on it. It's a nice kind of compact way of just working on stuff, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So are you playing in any bands?
Well, right now I'm not, because again, stuff is not really happening over here still. But as far as bands, like, I mean, for a living, I play in like function or wedding bands and stuff like that, the usual kind of thing. And then outside of that, I'm a member of one band in Dublin, which is like a kind of a jazz influenced hip hop type outfit, like a three piece, which is it's a lot of fun. It's called Senu. I can send you a link to it afterwards or something like that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'll definitely check that out.
Yeah, cool. I'll send you that. So that's the only other band that I'm a member of, and then there's my own thing, which I don't think it counts as a band because it's not out gigging yet. But yeah, that would be my main things at the moment.
So yeah, definitely. I want to jump into that with you. That you posted a clip of you on the guitar singing a song with the upcoming project you're working on. What's that all about?
That is the result of the lockdown last year as well. It was like, well, it was interesting how it came about, because like just before lockdown, like last March, I was writing a song that I intended to use just to collaborate with a friend on, because he's a singer, and he was like, you should write a song, an instrumental, and I'll put vocals to it. So it was the first time I'd have written a song. I usually, before that, I write like instrumental, like math rock kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't have any like complete disregard for vocals. But then this experience of writing a song for him with vocals in mind, it's just like a whole different way of thinking about it really for me. So it's like the idea that you can just leave space and you don't have to like shoehorn these like proggy ideas into every second of music, because you can just leave a space and the vocalist will do their thing, and it's cool. So it's a lot less pressure. So I really enjoyed writing that song for him. So I was just like, I'm just going to try and write a bunch of songs, like an album, and just do vocals on them. You know, I'm not a good singer. Like, I'm just going to straight up, like, I'm not a good singer. But like I said, I'd do it just for an experiment and something to keep me busy with during lockdown. So I did it, and by, I think it was like last July, I had like an album's worth of stuff. So I've been recording it whenever I get a chance ever since then, and I think it should be done by this summer. I really hope it is.
And this is all going to be self-produced?
Well, no, I mean, I recorded the drums in my friend's studio, and we did the guitars kind of remotely over Zoom and stuff. Like, we reamped the guitars using his stuff as well. So no, it's not really self-produced. Like, I'll be getting someone else to mix it and stuff as well. Like, I'm pretty limited in my ability production wise. Like, I can record the parts in on the instruments and that's cool, but like I can't make them sound pretty at the end of it. You know, I'll have to hand that off to someone else, but I'm really looking forward to it. It should be cool. It should sound cool when it's done.
Yeah, definitely. From what I've seen, it definitely sounds pretty interesting. And now, is this just going to be like a one-time thing for you that you think, or are you going to try to keep on making it an ongoing
thing? Yeah, I think I'd like to, because like, it was the most fun I've ever had writing music, for sure, is writing this stuff, because it's like, it's just a whole, it's like a breath of fresh air to do something new. And it's interesting the way it turns out, because it's not really a cohesive, like the song that you saw, the acoustic one with me singing, is kind of the only song like that on the album. Like, that's a very kind of like slow, vibey little acoustic number, but like a lot of the songs are kind of like prog rock songs and stuff. And it just kind of serves as like a mixtape of all the stuff that I listen to. So I find that it's the only time that that's ever happened. Like, whereas if I just write instrumental tracks, they all kind of come out just sounding like instrumental, like math rock stuff. So I think it's the most unique way for me to write music, is to do it with this mindset of like, I'm going to sing and do a proper job of it. So I'm definitely going to continue. When this album is done, I'm going to write some more, try and get another album by next year or something. I don't know.
That's awesome to hear, man. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Now, you were talking a little bit about, you said you had a little bit of an injury in your wrist. Now, what had happened with that, and have you had any more injuries besides that while playing the drums?
I think the only one I've ever had before this is just a minor kind of thumb injury that I might have just been gripping my stick too tight. And it was interesting. Like, I went like to the end of the earth to find out what was causing it, because I was like, oh God, why am I getting so much pain? And I went to like physiotherapists and doctors and like some specialists and got like an x-ray and stuff. And then I was like, nothing's working. I went and I got acupuncture in my thumb, and like it immediately just got rid of the problem, and it was fine ever since. So try out some acupuncture. But then, no, that's the only other one I've ever had. And this one, I think, was just caused by I just started practicing a lot more. So if I got the injury in March last year, it would have been like the previous Christmas. I started like practicing like maybe 3 or 4 hours a day. Just I really wanted to kind of improve quicker. And I think like my technique isn't perfect for sure. So like I think the fact that it's not multiplied by the fact that I was practicing for a lot longer means that any injuries that were going to occur are going to occur pretty soon. And they did. And that this is what it is. But it's not too bad anymore. It's like I got like a, you know, a cortisone injection in my muscle.
Yeah.
It's like, because essentially what I had is tennis elbow, you know. And it's the same principle, the same kind of motions that cause it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Literally, like, all I really have to do to take care of it now is just do some, like, forearm stretches before I play, and just take regular breaks and just don't play for as long per day, which is fine. I don't really mind doing that, you know.
Right, yeah. One of my gnarly little accidents, it's nothing, like, muscular or nothing like that, but definitely still a pain in the ass. I was playing, and I had some cheapo sticks, you know, and I had been using these sticks for a while, and I must have hit the rim too hard. And it snapped the stick, but it didn't snap it completely in half. What it did, you know, and it split it.
Yeah.
But when I was gripping it with my finger, right in the inside of my pointer finger here, went Ooh. In where that split was. And with me gripping it, it squeezed it and pinched it together. So I had to, like, have somebody help me, you know, like, bend the stick open so I could pull my hand out. Otherwise, if I just did it myself, I'm just going to keep pinching it and risk getting this big, you know, deep-ass splinter there. So I don't know how it happened, but it did. And
yeah, it's one of those bizarre things that just seems to happen. It's like, Jesus, that sounds horrible, man.
Yeah, terrible. terrible times. I'll never forget that.
It sounds like something that when it happens, it would be very confusing at first. Like, what am I feeling right now?
Like, exactly. You know? I'm like, I see blood, and I'm just like, why is my finger hurting? I could literally lift my hand, and the stick would just – it was pinching so hard, dude. It just – stuck to my finger. I thought it went through, but thankfully I just, you know, just pinched it. But
sure.
So
yeah, I've been pretty lucky. Like I don't even think that during gigs I've ever gotten any like crazy injuries, or like I don't think I've ever even seen blood on my drums, which is pretty good achievement. yeah I don't think so.
At gigs that you've done in the past, what's one of the craziest things that you've seen that's either happened to you or just something that you got to see?
Crazy. I've had like, I haven't played many like brutal rock shows or anything like that, so I've not seen anything like from the stage outward crazy. Well, do you know what, I have seen some pretty brutal scenes at weddings and stuff like that, which isn't, it's not the most rock and roll answer, but it's equally depraved. Like, man, the stuff that people do at weddings. I remember I saw one time, I think we were playing the song from the end of Dirty Dancing, where like in the movie the guy like lifts the girl up and it's this huge fucking, you know, romantic scene or whatever.
Yeah.
And this like try doing that like at the end of a wedding when you're absolutely like ripped drunk.
Yeah.
The guy just picks up this girl and he ends up like just pile driving her into the ground by accident. It's just like Jesus Christ, you know.
Oh Lord.
But,
so
there's stuff like that where it's just people at their worst. But like as for stuff that happened to me or on stage, a guy I was playing in a band with dislocated his knee on a gig one time. He just turned around the wrong way or something like that. And I saw him take a knee during the gig, and I was like, that's an interesting stage maneuver. And I was just like, I was like, what was that about? And he's like, oh no, I've broken my knee. I was like, oh, sorry.
That's funny.
The worst thing that's happened to me is probably just like the usual type of malfunctions where like your snare wires like suddenly disengage and you're playing a timbale. Or like, you know, when you're playing and like the kick pedal gets caught in the front of your jeans and you're just like,
and you can feel your pants moving.
Oh man, stuff like that, like all the time. Or that's actually a thing I was thinking. I was like, it'd be such a good invention to invent something that you can like apply to your snare if that ever happens. Because like even if you like bust the bottom head in your snare, it's so out of action. Like there's no way it'll sound good. So what if you could get a product that you could just somehow slap it onto your snare and it would mimic the sound of having a snare.
That'd
get you out of a jam, like, you know, because man, it sounds horrible. It's so embarrassing, like just hitting this little bongo.
Right, yeah, it's a dum dum dum.
Yeah, it's just so bad. It's so emasculating.
That's funny. That's funny that you bring up the whole wedding thing. There's a video that I seen not too long ago of this. There's these people at a wedding, and there was this grandma that was at the wedding, and she thought that the pool was the dance floor because there's an outdoor wedding in somebody's backyard or whatever it was. And I guess I can see why it looked like it was a dance floor because, you know, it was dark outside and the lights in the pool. There's nobody in there. So it was, you know, no waves, nothing moving in there. So she must have thought it was a dance floor, and she's just walking and there's music playing in the background. She walks right in the pool.
Oh, dude.
It's so fucking funny.
Oh, that's amazing.
So on your YouTube channel, I think it's the Pepe Sylvia with the drums. That's your most viewed video at 3.1 million views.
Wow, jeez, I haven't checked it. But
it's gnarly, man. 3.1 million views. So with all the videos, you know, like the second following up to that is the Boomhauer with drums, 2.4 million views. Then Family Guy with almost 2 million views on that. Sweet. All those good interpretations of the drums. What's your creative process behind that? Like, how do you come up with the stuff that you do? And what's your trial and error? How long does it take?
Yeah, that's a good question. And it kind of does vary depending on the scene, of course. But the process is remarkably, or it might be remarkably to hear, it's just very simple. I mean, it's literally just like, you can get like apps for your phone where you can like loop a section of an MP3 clip. You like set an A point and a B point and it'll just indefinitely loop that one little section. So I use one of those apps and like just take it like a phrase or a sentence at a time, whatever feels like. You know, you can kind of, to listen to something, you can tell when like the actor takes a pause or like waits for a beat to start again. So I just take the first like clip of them talking and just like set it going, set it looping. And like, you'd be so surprised like how quickly your brain discovers a pattern in like even what seems like the most random little snippet of speech. And like, the thing I always say is that it's definitely like a self-defense mechanism, so you don't go insane. You know, your brain just like makes a rhythm out of it. And it's like, but everything, like, I mean, if you like isolate a sentence, including like one of the sentences I just spoke, and if you just listen to it over and over and over again, you'd realize that it's actually got quite a rhythm to it. Like, people just speak that way. Mm-hmm. So I just do that and like just kind of start by like maybe trying to like latch on to like the most significant rhythmic like syllables that they speak with, like just tapping it out in the hi-hat just to kind of get a feel for it. And then once I feel like I kind of have the general rhythm and like hills and valleys of their speech of that little section in my head, I'll try and then orchestrate it onto the drum kit. And I guess like doing that in and of itself, like isolated one bit at a time, isn't that difficult once you spend time on it. The hardest part about it is like deciding what way you're going to orchestrate it in terms of like making it one big cohesive piece. So like if you were to, because the option that you have, or the option that I found that I had at every instance, is like I can make either this sentence sound like I can play a groove over it to make it sound like a kind of like a little thing or whatever, or I can like emphasize each syllable individually, like on a different drum, like for impact sake, without like necessarily having like a pulse to it. So deciding at each point of which of those approaches to take with it was the hardest part, because like if you do too much of either of those things, it kind of gets really tiring on your ear. Mm-hmm. Like if I was just to kind of like come up with a different groove for every sentence that people spoke, it'll just be a video of me playing like different tempo beats one after another with no like transitions into them.
It'd
be really like jarring to your ear to hear. So yeah, constructing it like a musical piece is definitely the hardest part about it. But like, I was always surprised, even though when I was doing them like every day, or like working on them every day, I was always surprised at how all you have to do is just kind of sit there and listen for a few minutes and you'll just pick up on the rhythm. Like even if you listen to something, it's like, there's no way I could get rhythm out of that. And you just, it kind of happens, like, you know. And to answer your question about how long it took, it definitely varied. Like some of them, I think the Family Guy one that you mentioned there was one of the ones that I kind of, it's quite short, like it's about 20 to 30 seconds long. So I remember I sat down and like in the one session, I kind of figured it out and recorded it and got it done. So that was maybe like 2 to 3 hours work. But the likes of that Pepe Sylvia one, or the Willy Wonka one, or most of the others, in fact. I think I spent like maybe like 30 hours on like working them out, but not in one sitting, but like over the course of a week or two or whatever, about 30 hours, and then about another 4 to 5 hours to get a good take, because I didn't want to like edit them. I wanted to just get one solid take, even if I like sacrificed some of the tightness of it and stuff, you know. I wanted to get it just one kind of video of me playing it, exactly, as opposed to like some chopped up thing, you know. So the longest probably took about 30 hours altogether, the shortest probably about 2, I'd say.
That's fucking bizarre. I would have expected it had been, you know, one video take a week here, you know, maybe two.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. Like, it depends on how inspired I am by the piece as well. And each one is different because each actor speaks differently and each scene is different and like the context of each scene is different. So like the longest one was definitely The Rock, you know, the one of the wrestler The Rock. He's given like a shout out speech or he's like, he's calling. That took so long. I don't know why it was, but like, yeah, man, that took forever. Like, but it's a funny video in the end. Like, it worked out well, but like, geez, I spent like, I probably like altogether, I was working on that for like 3 weeks and I was like, this is so, I hate this, you know, but no, I'm glad I did it though, because it came out really well.
It's just, I just can't get over, and you know, like Jones' big ass truck rental and stores, that's a great one. And
thanks.
You know, what sparked in your mind to make you even want to attempt to do something like this? Because I can't think of anybody else out there that's done videos where they're making beats to just a regular conversation, you know?
Sure. Yeah. It was interesting the way it came about, and it was actually, it kind of just fell into place a little bit. Like, I had just a couple of months before I did my first one, which is that Pepe Silvia one. I had just gotten that practice space, the place where I shoot those videos. I had just kind of moved into that. And shortly afterwards, I had bought myself just a little, I don't have it here, but it's just a little Zoom handheld mic, like a condenser mic, just to record myself playing clips and just put them on Instagram or whatever. Just with the intention of like recording my practice sessions, just even to listen back to myself or just to show like beats to people online or something like that, you know. But after that, I was kind of like, well, I could record myself playing videos along with like songs that don't have drums in them already. So like that's where the video game soundtrack stuff came out of, because it was like none of those had drums on them, so I can just jam and record that and put it up online. And I did that for a while, and then I was like, I'm gonna check on YouTube to see if there's any like performances by my favorite artists that just don't happen to have drums on them. Like, so like usually like acoustic sessions or like, you know, appearances where they're just playing solo, I'll add drums to those. And then I ran out of those, and then I was like, well, what else could I put drums on that doesn't have drums on it? So I ended up like just scrolling through like my YouTube favorite lists or whatever. And I don't know. I wish I had a more like kind of profound reason for doing it, but I was just like, huh, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I could put drums on that. And I was just like, the moment of going insane, I suppose, like, where it's just like, I could drum on that. And I remember just having the idea and kind of not really like thinking enough to talk myself out of it. I think it's the main thing, like, you know, so I just had the idea, downloaded it, put it on my phone and just started doing it. And lucky for me, that one, which is the first one I tried, just happened to work out really well. Like the first few sentences that I attempted, just I happened to find a really nice way of playing them, and I was like, oh, this is really fun, and it actually sounds pretty cool. So like maybe if I tried a different one and it didn't work out so easily or so readily, I might have bailed on it and not tried it. But it more than anything else as well, it just gave me something new to practice, and like a significantly more challenging thing to practice than I've ever done before. So I went with it, like, you know, I really started enjoying it.
Real quick, all I'm doing right now is I'm actually going to do a screen share here in a minute if my laptop will cooperate with me. That way people, because I know people that are listening to this, if they've never heard of you, they're probably thinking, what are they talking about? He's drumming to Family Guy. He's drumming to Willy Wonka. They're probably wondering what's going on. So I'm definitely going to pull up I'll go ahead and do the Willy Wonka one. That's a pretty good one. And so real quick before we get this this clip of the Willy Wonka drums, what's some of the stuff that you've done toward you or if at all, where you're thinking, man, this didn't really work out and I'm not going to share it? So what kind of stuff that you've done before with these videos kind of got shelved and never got put out?
Yeah, that one actually for a while was going to be one of those.
Oh, really?
And it was mostly because like when I did the first one, like the Willy Wonka one is the second one I did. So after doing the first one and it just goes crazy viral, and like I was overwhelmed by that. Like obviously it never happened to me before, and just like, just this like onslaught of notifications coming your way and people sharing your video.
Right,
just,
right.
Like, it's a crazy feeling for a human being to experience, like just to all of a sudden be in like thousands of people's brains. Like it's crazy. Anyway, so I was overwhelmed by that, and I was like, well, damn, if I want to do another one, I better live up to like the expectations of like how decently that one turned out. And then I just kind of, for a while, I was overthinking it. And I was like, no, I got to make this more like groovy or like more flowy or more X or Y or whatever. And I just got myself all worked up over it. So I kind of abandoned it halfway through and tried a few others. But then I came back to it once I kind of relaxed and I was just like, I'm just going to do it and just enjoy myself and just see how it works out and then just put it up online, because otherwise it's just, it's too contrived. Like, so I went for it. But I was going to do the infamous steamed hams scene from The Simpsons, which is like definitely the one that's been requested most of me. And I tried that and that one just didn't really work out. It just didn't really flow. There's too many like long silences in the conversation in that particular scene. So it didn't sound good. But I think that was really the only few that I didn't do. Most of them that I tried ended up working out.
Now, are you working on any current ones as of 2021?
I'm not working on any, but I do know the one that I want to do next. I don't know for sure if it's going to work, but I think it'll be cool. I don't know if I want to tell you. I mean, I because if I don't end up doing it, then it'll be like, that would have been cool. Why'd you say you were going to do that? You know? But you see, the thing is, I'm actually just looking for a new place to record at the moment because I can't use that place. I don't use that place anymore. So,
okay.
And it's kind of hard to do, especially during COVID. It's hard to find a new space to rent, you know, for your stuff. But once I do that, I have that idea to work on. I have a few other like not quite the same type of video things that I want to do. And I'm sure other scenes will come up as well that I could put my drums on and stuff like that. But yeah, I only have one in mind at the moment, which I hope will be good when it's done. I'm sorry, I can't tell you.
Now, being that you're from Ireland, a really cool one that I feel like would be fucking funny and a lot of people get a kick out of it is if you did a drum rendition to a Conor McGregor trash talk video.
That's actually a thing I did consider, like back when he was at his height of his popularity in UFC.
Yeah,
I really wanted to do that. But it was interesting. And you think when you say that there's got to be like 1,000 clips of him talking that would be perfect. And I couldn't find one. And I don't think it's that I couldn't find a specific clip. It's just that I think that all the clips I found of him was either like music in the background of when he was talking and it's like really loud and stuff. And it just wasn't quite perfect. But I don't really like him, but like I'm definitely open to the idea of doing it because he's a hilarious man. Like, you know, yeah. I'd love to do like more stuff that isn't TV shows as well. Like the likes of that, like UFC stuff or like, I don't know, reality TV or something like that. It'd be cool if I could find some stuff, like, you know.
Definitely. Now, I think, can we see the screen here?
It says your screen. Oh, there we go. Yeah, I see it.
Alrighty, perfect. So we'll go ahead and pull this Willy Wonka drum video up. So for anybody that's listening and has no idea what we're talking about of these drum videos he does, this is what we are talking about.
Mr. Wonka, I am extraordinarily busy, sir. I just wanted to ask about the chocolate. The lifetime supply of chocolate for Charlie. When does he get it?
He doesn't.
Why not?
Because he broke the rules.
What rules? We didn't say any rules, did we, Charlie?
Wrong, sir. Wrong!
Under Section 37B of the contract signed by him, it states quite clearly that all offers shall become null and void if, and you can read it for yourself in this photostatic copy, I, the undersigned, shall forfeit all rights, privileges, and licenses herein and herein contained, etc., etc., fax mentis, incendium gloria culpum, etc., etc., memo bis punitor delicatum. It's all there, black and white, clear as crystal. You stole fizzy lifting drinks. You bumped into the ceiling, which now has to be washed and sterilized, so you get nothing. You lose. Good day, sir.
You're a crook. You're a cheat and a swindler. That's what you are. How can you do a thing like this? Build up a little boy's hopes and then smash all his dreams to pieces. You're an inhuman monster.
Absolutely nuts. crazy.
It's crazy how like that was, I did that like almost 4 years ago.
Yeah, and, like, from 2017.
I still remember exactly, like I could probably play it now because I just rehearsed it so much that like the rhythm is just deep in my brain. You know, probably like have forgotten valuable information to replace with that. I probably can't do maths anymore or something like that, you know.
So going back to that video and, you know, those earlier days of those videos that you've done, how do you think you've changed as a drummer in a whole?
Well, I've definitely gotten better. And like doing those videos had really improved my timing. Obviously, I mean, you kind of have to work on your timing when you're doing that stuff.
Right.
But I can even tell Not necessarily with those, because they're so over rehearsed that you can't really get an idea of how good or bad the drummer is, because they're just executing an automatic process at that point. But like, if I look at my videos that were like the other like musical drumming videos that I brought out around that time, I can see myself like definitely getting better, like from the earlier ones that I put up around that time to like the stuff like a year or two ago. Like, I've definitely improved, like mostly with my timing. Like, I've never really cared too much about like what level of technique I have, because like all my ideas tend to be a little bit simplistic and like single stroke based and stuff, and it's more just about kind of being creative and stuff. And once I have a basic command of the drumsticks, I can kind of execute my ideas and stuff like that. But like, my timing is something that I always want to improve. And like, that has been, even to be honest, in the last like 3 or 4 months, like my timing has gotten like really a lot better. And like, that was, if I was to say one thing has improved since like around that time with that Willy Wonka video, it has to be like my timing and like my feel of time has improved a lot.
Speaking of that Willy Wonka video, did you ever get a chance to check out, somebody had put up a video, like they did a jazz compilation to that?
A lot of people put stuff on that video. I saw one guy did a saxophone along with it. Dan, I can't remember his second name. I really like that. And I think a girl from, who was in Berkeley, put like prog, or not like prog, but like jazz chords arrangements and stuff on her Rhodes. A bunch of people got involved with that one. It was great. And then I think someone like stitched them all together, and like they're all just playing them at once, and it just sounds like you're going insane to listen to it, like, you know. But I love that stuff, and it's real, like, it sounds cheesy, but it's really like humbling and like an honor to see people putting their own stuff on a video that you did. It's crazy, like, you know.
And I couldn't help but notice when I looked up at your YouTube channel before I had started this interview, it's baller what you did with your banner. You put all the criticism that people have put on your videos as one big banner, and you know, you're just kind of like, whatever, you know, you're still doing your thing. And,
absolutely, yeah. That's to be honest, that's not that is why I did it. I love a really spiteful comment. I love it. I love reading it. But it's like, that's my reaction to when I see one like that. I don't feel hurt. I just find it hilarious. Like,
yeah, exactly. You
know? And it's like, not even the words that they spoke that's hilarious. It's just like the fact that someone took time out of their day and they had so much anger in their heart and they just typed out this message and they're like, "Fuck you, man. Fuck you." I love that. I think it's hilarious. And so, yeah, I spent about 2 hours one day going between my YouTube and my Facebook pages and picking out the worst, like the meanest comments. And I was like, I'm going to create like a wall of shame and just like put it on my Facebook banner. Man, if you wanted the worst of the worst, 100% came from, like, I got a lot of shares on Facebook from like, I don't know. Do you have the Lad Bible in America? Is that a page?
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So they shared, for some reason, they shared one of my videos, and their demographic is not my demographic. Like, you know, they're all just like, what the fuck is this shit? What is he doing? All I want to hear is the movie clip. Why is this guy playing the drums? And I was like, people were not into it. And I went on their comment section and I was like, oh my God, this is a gold mine. Like, some people were receptive and they were like, that's pretty cool. But like, a lot of people were like, I don't understand why anyone would like this. So I had to take a few screenshots.
I wonder what it would have been like if the Lad Bible would have put something positive about it. And then those people that were talking shit, I guarantee you they'd be the same type of people that'd be like, oh man, this is fucking great. Like, who would have thought about something like this? You know, that's what I think is kind of funny. People just jump on a bandwagon just because a big page, you know, like,
yeah,
it's just, I guess, how people are.
Yeah, exactly. It's just human nature, I suppose. Like, you know, now in fairness, like the Lad Bible themselves, they shared it because they thought it was cool, or they wanted the viewers to see it. So they weren't like, oh, look at this guy, what is he doing? Like, no, they were like, this is cool, and like, check this out. But like, it's just the people who watched it were like, no, it's not cool.
And that's funny, those people that, you know, that'll judge, and they're so quick to judge and get so angry, like you said, they had probably have no idea as far as the thought process goes to make anything better, you know. So what's their criticism to you, you know, unless it's coming from somebody like James Hetfield from Metallica, you know, that'd probably be a little concerning in my opinion. I'd be like, oh damn, if he don't like it, then, you know, maybe
something. Right, yeah. So yeah, people, but even at that, I mean, it's like, I think, and I'm not calling this art, but I mean, I'm just saying in general, when it comes to art, it's so subjective that like, if you create a thing that everybody likes, chances are it's not very thought provoking, or it's not very kind of inspired. You know, if everyone agrees that it's fine, it's cool. I'd much rather some people hate it and some people love it, because then at least it inspires emotion in the viewer. You know, it's like, so even if James Hetfield was like, "Man, that sucks. It's the worst thing I've ever seen," I'd be like, "That's fine. I don't really like Metallica either." <You know? laughs> But it's like, it's valid. It's an opinion and it's fine. You know.
Now, for going back a little bit with just music in general, what's one of the first concerts that you've been to? And after your first concert, what's your most favorite that you've gone to?
That's a good question. The first concert I went to was Paramore. Did you ever listen to Paramore?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They were my first concert in Ireland. Man, that was a great gig.
Oh, I'm
a huge fan of their first and, to a lesser extent, but still their second album. I think the music on their first album is so well played. Especially their drummer, man, he's incredible, and the parts that he wrote are so good. So I'm a big fan. That was my first gig, and I loved it. That was like, I think that was back in 2007 or six or something like that. And if I had to pick a favorite gig, there's a kind of a couple. I saw Meshuggah. You know Meshuggah?
Oh God, yeah, I seen that 2 years ago.
I think it was probably on the same tour that I saw them, so, because I saw them then as well, and it was.
They were on the Danny Wimmer tour run, so like they were doing like Chicago Open Air, Louder Than Life, all those big U.S. festivals. So I'm sure that they just came from a stretch off of that too.
Possibly, it was the tour that they did after their last album release, the Violent Sleep of Reason or whatever it's called. Anyways, but it was like the show was incredible. It sounded like
who all played with them?
What?
Who all played with them? Do you remember?
I don't even know if they had they had to have a support act. I don't actually remember. I think we might have.
Was this in Ireland?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to look this up.
I think we might have arrived too late to see the support act, but they surely would have had one. It was in
2018?
Yeah, I think it was 2018.
Was it at, it says the Vicar Street in Dublin?
Vicar Street,
Vicar Street in Dublin. Yeah, it was, there was only one opening act. There was a band called The Haunted.
Oh yeah, I don't think I actually saw them, but I was utterly blown away by Meshuggah's show in terms of like the production. Like the lights were so accurately synced up to like all the parts, and they were being manually operated by a lighting technician. It wasn't like they just pressed play on some show,
right? And then it just goes.
This dude is like, you know, he's like a wizard. It's the only gig I've ever been to where I saw people going up and like shaking hands with the lighting engineer at the end of the gig and be like, "Man, great job!" So it was like, that's. You know, but like the show, it sounded like, in the best way possible, it sounded like listening to like a CD, you know, like, but it still had that live impact to it. So that is definitely up there. I also saw Snarky Puppy when they were kind of becoming like, when they kind of blew up a couple of years ago. They played in this tiny little jazz club in Dublin, and it was like way more people turned up to the gig than they anticipated would. So it was like way over capacity. Just huge vibes all night, and it was like I was really drunk at that gig, and I met the band afterwards, and they hung around to like shake hands with everyone and say hi, and I made an absolute show of myself in front of like their band leader, who was like my musical hero at the time. I was so drunk. I was like, I just wanted to be his friend, you know, and he just like, "Bro, I just want to be friends with you, man." But yeah, that was probably up there for me too. Two very different types of gigs, but like equally like mind-blowing, both of them.
Definitely, yeah. Man. Did you ever get into Blue Oyster Cult at all?
Only I've only heard like their biggest songs, of course.
But, Don't Fear the Reaper.
Yeah. They're a good band though, man. I really like their sound. Like,
yeah.
You had one of their members on in your podcast, didn't you?
Yeah, I had Albert Bouchard, the original drummer for it. And yesterday, nice. I had, not yesterday, it was 2 days ago, I had the original drummer for REO Speedwagon. That was pretty
cool. Oh, brilliant.
So all these older bands, I have a couple more lined up, but it's just the history on all those bands. Like, do you like Joe Walsh?
Yeah, I love the Eagles and Joe Walsh.
Alan, the guy I interviewed from REO, his name was Alan Gratzer, and he was telling me about back in like the 60s and 70s and 80s, you know, those acid trippy days or whatever. He said that he'd always get a knock on his door on tour, and it'd be Joe Walsh, and he'd just be like, "Hey, come check out," you know, he's like, "Come check this shit out of my room real quick." And he'd go to his room, and he'd have just the TV, the coffee machine, all random sorts of stuff hot glued to the ceiling in his hotel room. I was just thinking, dude, that's so funny.
That's hilarious. Just because he can, like, you know.
Right, exactly. And that's something I could just totally see someone like Joe Walsh doing. It's just
absolutely
it's just stuff like that, you know. I love hearing stuff like that because I would never know.
Exactly. I know, I love that. And like, I love even like if I can find on YouTube like behind the scenes like album making
of.
And I love that stuff. It's just like it's like a window into this like brief period of time where there's something incredible was happening. Like I love that, you know.
Killer albums, you know, like they're making one with System of a Down, if I'm not mistaken, or just Serj Tankian, but like just if they documented from start to finish with like Toxicity or whatever, like they're really big, I would be watching that every fucking night. I love stuff like that.
Same here, man. Yeah, I love it. And it's a pity, it's almost kind of cool because like some of the older albums, like even the likes of Toxicity, I think that came out in like early 2000s kind of ish. So like any footage of like the studio would be like VHS tape, like
exactly,
shaky, you know,
exactly,
so it, like,
dude. Yeah,
that just makes it like such, it's like an artifact. It's so cool. Like,
it would not be like the cinematic stuff that you see now. It'd be like exactly like you could tell somebody was camcorder with all this stuff.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Actually, one of my favorite bands is Dream Theater.
And
like I don't listen to them so much anymore, but they're definitely like one of my all time favorites, and they got me into like prog music and stuff. So like they're up there for me forever. Like, but their drummer, Mike Portnoy, was like really good for like documenting the recording of all their albums. So like if you go onto YouTube and type in Dream Theater Making Of, there's all these videos of the making of all their albums. Like he's walking around like showing like the studio setup and like here's my drums, and he filmed himself recording all the drum tracks to all the songs. And like he's just so OCD about it, but it's incredible because now you have this like footage from like some of my favorite albums of all time, and like him just like showing what CDs he was listening to for inspiration at the time on the album. And it's just like, man, this is incredible. Like I love that stuff. I can't get enough of it. It's so cool.
Now, real quick before we cut out of here, usually what I'll ask a couple of the, I've only done it a couple of times. Mm-hmm. Just a little, it's going to be some random out there questions. Let me pull these up. This fucking phone's acting retarded right now.
No worries. Take your time. Like a quick fire round type thing, is it?
Yeah, it's just like just a funny thing to, you know, end it with. And
yeah, totally, man.
Usually I'll ask them and they kind of give me the vibe where they're like, you know, this is kind of stupid, but it seems like you've got a pretty good, you know, there's no bad intentions from it.
No, totally.
Damn it, this is taking forever.
Are you trying to get them on the same phone that you're recording video with now? Or?
No, I'm just using my cell phone and I'm recording off my laptop. I'm just trying to get this thing to load up. It seems like I've been having issues with my internet out here.
Damn.
Okay, here we go. This is what I was looking for. So like I said, they're going to be random out there questions. So first one would be, would you rather have Cheeto fingers for the rest of your life or popcorn kernels stuck in the back of your throat for the rest of your life?
I'm going to have to go with Cheeto fingers, but that's influenced entirely by the fact that I don't like popcorn.
Yeah.
That's a pretty shocking thing to say. I mean, but like, so even the eating of the snack that got me into my scenario of having something in my throat, it wouldn't be enjoyable. So no part of the popcorn is good. Whereas if I had Cheeto fingers, at least I've eaten some Cheetos, and that's
right. Right.
Yeah. So I have to go with that.
So the second one is, would you rather have sandpaper or toilet paper or hot sauce as eye drops?
I would say hot sauce as eye drops because I use those far less than I use toilet paper. You know what I mean? I would go my entire life with really dry eyes before using eye drops, but I don't think I don't think I can go my whole life without using toilet paper.
Right, exactly.
I'd have to go with that.
Would you rather have permanent clown face or permanent clown clothes?
Oh, permanent clown clothes. Permanent clown clothes every day. Like, yeah, definitely. Well, do I have to... No, I'd have to wear the clothes all the time. I was going to say, could I whip them off and have a normal outfit underneath? But then that defeats the purpose. So, no, clown clothes.
And then my last one for you is, would you rather have legs as long as your fingers or fingers as long as your legs?
I'd have to... Oh, shit. Either one of those kind of makes it impossible to play the drums.
Yeah.
If I had fingers as long as legs, I could play the drums from, like, the other side of the room.
Right, yeah.
But No, but then I couldn't use my legs on it. I'd have to get...
You have to make some crazy-ass mechanism where the kick drum's like feet, you know?
we should get the guy who designed the pedals for the dude from Def Leppard, because he has some technology out there. You know, the guy who lost his arm?
Oh, right,
so
yeah.
He plays his kit with, like, a series of, like, pedals that, like, hit a snare and stuff. It's incredible. So he'd be the man to ask.
Right.
Like a really long kick drum pedal, you know? And then I'd pick probably the fingers as long as legs thing, yeah.
Dude, I a lot of people, before we jump off, a lot of people don't know, but did you know that Tony Iommi from Black Sabbath actually had some sort of accident on his hands, and the fingertips from, like, here all the way down to here, they're not, it's not real. It's like prosthetic fingertips that he has. And his doctor said, you'll never be able to play guitar again. And sure enough, he still didn't. Yeah. So when I found that out, and that's no bullshit either. He actually talked about it in an interview before. His fingertips on one of his hands, I think it's the one that he uses. I think it's his left hand that he uses with the press and everything. Yeah. It's all plastic fingertips. It's not real fingertips.
How did he do it? Was it like a lawnmower accident or something there?
I'd have to look into it again, but I know that the fingertips aren't real. They're prosthetic, plastic, or whatever they are. They're not real fingertips, and he still fucking plays all those solos from the Blacks. Yeah.
Yeah, because I heard a rumor, like one of these urban legend things. Now, I know that the finger thing is true, but I heard that, like, it happened, like, they had just kind of landed their record deal or whatever, and they had some show coming up, and then it happened to him. He cut them off, however he cut them off, and he was like, I'm not going to let this stop me. And he wrapped up his, like, fingers in, like, sellotape to compensate for having no finger. And he just used, like sellotape fingers or something like that. That sounds like bullshit, but I wonder if it's true. You know, like, why would you pick sellotape over, like, I don't know, like a thimble or something like that?
Right, something. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You would think.
But that's like, that's a fear that I have, though. It's like, man, if you damage, like, either of your arms or either of your legs, like, you're done. Like, I mean, it's so scary, like, how valuable just, like, your limbs are. I mean, obviously, that's the understatement.
If you're, like, walking out the door and you bust your ass on some ice or whatever and you break your leg, dude, and if you really tear, you know, you tear some muscles in your knee or whatever, like a tendon or whatever, dude, you are fucked for a while.
Yeah, and if you, like, and the thing is, like, you can't get sucked into thinking about that stuff because you'd never leave the house, you know, you'd be just, like...
Exactly, yeah.
you'd be treating your life like it's Final Destination or something, you'd be, you know, it's just, like...
And that stuff can even happen in the house, too, you know? You can slip on anything, you know?
Fuck, yeah, just get in the fridge and stay in there, fuck it.
Exactly, yeah.
<It's> safety.
Well, David, dude, I appreciate you taking the time talking with me.
Ah, no trouble,
it was a pleasure getting a little bit behind the scenes on all those videos that you do. And before we jump off, is there anything you want to say to anybody listening?
Nothing, like, I have nothing really in particular to promote or anything like that. Just, I hope everyone's getting through the lockdown and keeping their sanity and stuff like that. And I really hope we get some gigs on the horizon in the next, like, year or something like that. That'd be sweet. But I'm really looking forward to...
How often do you come to the US if you do tours and stuff?
I've never been. No, but I was actually planning on coming over before all this shit hit the fan. So I'm definitely going to just come over as a visit whenever I can again. But there's a few people I was kind of speaking to in various spots in the US that I could hook up with and maybe do some, like, just a few gigs, like small town gigs when I'm over there. But, like, oh man, I can't wait to come over. Like, just as a tourist and as a musician, I can't wait to just experience it. Like, it's so different than over here.
If you ever get to Chicago or anything like in Indianapolis, definitely get a hold of me.
Oh, 100%, man, I will. Yeah, definitely.
All righty, buddy. You take care.
You too, bro. This is fun.
All right, see you, buddy.
See ya.